Okay, this lecture is about bioluminescence from insects. First of all, we have to make sure that we're clear on exactly what is bioluminescence. Bioluminescence is light produced by a living organism. It's present in many different organisms on the planet, from bacteria, fungi, crustaceans, fish, insects, mollusks, millipedes, centipedes. It's relatively rare within these groups, though, that you wouldn't say most representatives of any of these groups are bioluminescent. Now, people frequently get bioluminescence confused with fluorescence or cuticular autofluorescence in insects. Fluorescence is the release of light at one wavelength due to exposure to a different wavelength. Scorpions are a good example of this. People hunt scorpions, those who are interested in finding them, having a UV light, a handheld UV light at night time, walking around, a scorpion cuticle fluoresces so that it reflects a whitish light once it's hit by the UV light. We can't see the UV light very well, but we can see fluorescence, which is a change in the wavelength of the light reflected back from the cuticle of scorpions. Fluorescent lights are fluorescent. They're one wavelength of light excites the phosphor on the inside of the tubes, and it gives off the visible light that we can see. So it's a change in wavelength of light. That's what fluorescence is. But what we're talking about is bioluminescence, which is actually light produced de novo anew through a biological reaction. There are a number of millipedes and centipedes that can produce light. I've seen them in centipedes in guano piles in caves in Borneo, that if you touch the millipede, it's a fear reaction. It releases a lot of bioluminescent light and scuttles away. But within the insects, it's only found in Coleoptera and Diptera. So that's only two orders of insects. But the interesting thing is, within Coleoptera, there seem to be multiple independent origins. And similarly, within Diptera, there are multiple independent origins. We know they're independent because the chemical reactions are different, and or the organs that produce the light are quite different. So within the Coleoptera, the fireflies are the obvious representative. Most of them are in the family Lampyridae. They have the common name fireflies, and here's where things get a little bit confusing. They're called glowworms as well. The Phengodidae are railroad worms. They're not found in Australia, only in, I think, southern and central America. Click beetles, Elateridae. Click beetles are common here, but not the bioluminescent ones. It's only South and Central America, once again, where bioluminescent click beetles are present. Within flies, Diptera. There are many, many families of flies, but bioluminescence has only arisen in one family, that is the Keroplatidae. They are related to a better known group called the mushroom flies, or Mycetophilidae. And in the famous ones in Australia and New Zealand are the glowworms, the genus Arachnocampa, Arachnocampa meaning spider-like grub. And there's also a genus of a relative also within Keroplatidae, but a distant relative, because it produces light from a completely different organ. It's a genus Orphelia, and one of their common names is the Dismalites from the southern states of USA. So they're in a fairly restricted area, and only one species is known. The fireflies, the adults use flashes to attract mates. There are many different species of fireflies. They're not that common in Australia. Many people aren't aware that they're present here, but they are. The western suburbs of Brisbane, there's a species of firefly, so if you're lucky enough, you have a fairly bushy sort of garden, you might see fireflies flashing away at the right time of year. It's usually around October, November, December. There's a couple of locations in Brisbane where I know where they're common at that time of year. One of them is there's a golf club out towards the Gap, and they accumulate in fairly large numbers there. I've seen them in the rainforests in southeast Queensland as well. There's a species present there, And the males fly around and they flash. They have species-specific flashes. So the female might respond, and then the male, they get into a duet flashing to each other, and the male approaches the female and they'll mate. There's many beautiful time-lapse images on the, or long exposure images on the web of that people have used to take photographs of fireflies flashing. Okay, so this is one Lampyrid, and you can see that the light organ is at the back of the body, where the cuticle is rather transparent. There's many quite beautiful photographs like this on the web if you search for them. Now here's a click beetle. You can see that this representative has the light organs are quite obvious even when it's not bioluminescing, so the cuticle is slightly different nature there. Obviously it has to be it's most efficient if it's transparent because the light is produced internally in cells. So very frequently, like in fireflies, there's some transparent cuticle associated with the light organ. And you can see that the click beetles produce this quite bright light. They seem to produce it when they're disturbed. So it may have an aposomatic function, that is a warning of distastefulness. Though I'm not sure if that's been proven. I think it has been with some larval fireflies, because the larvae produce light, and it's been shown that they are distasteful to animals. The phengotids, I've never seen these as living insects. They're only found in America, as I said. The females are larvae form. That means that the females, they look more like a larva than an adult, so they've retained all these juvenile structures and appearance. That's a female down on the bottom right. It's the immature, the larval stage, that produces light, and the remarkable thing is that they produce light of two different colours, a yellow and a red. So they're of great interest to scientists to try and find the proteins responsible for producing the different colours. And that's an adult on the left-hand side. So they're railroad worms. Okay, just to show you how sometimes the literature is not very reliable on bioluminescence, this is a paper came out in 2012, only last year, and it was published in a reputable journal called Naturwissenschaften, a German journal. Anyway, the title of the paper was here, "Light Mimicking Cockroaches Indicate a Tertiary Origin of Recent Terrestrial Bioluminescence." And the whole basis of the paper is that this group of cockroaches are bioluminescent. I was quite skeptical, and so I looked into the earlier literature and also looked carefully at this paper and found that it was extraordinarily misleading about the presence of bioluminescence. It cited an earlier paper published in a journal called Amazonia, and it's based on an observation by one person who was a cockroach collector in the Amazon, and he noticed that this single cockroach was bioluminescent, and that whole group then was assumed to be bioluminescent, but nobody had seen, no person other than the original collector had seen bioluminescent in any of these cockroaches. They have these unusual looking eye spots on their carapace, and many people collect them and breed them because they're such interesting looking cockroaches, but nobody has ever seen bioluminescence in these captive specimens. So to explain that, they say that, oh, there's something in their diet that's not quite right in captivity. But to my mind, I think they're just not bioluminescent at all. And to illustrate the paper, the author took a lot of images using fluorescence and didn't really take pains to point out that it was not bioluminescence, but it was autofluorescence. That is, they illuminated the specimens because they were all dead specimens, and dead specimens can't bioluminesce because the tissues are all dead. And they illuminated them with particular wavelengths of light and produced these colour images that happen to look like bioluminescence, but they're actually not. And the authors also compared the autofluorescence characteristics of the cuticle on those eye spots with the cuticle on the surface of the light organs in beetles. And they got a similar spectrum, as you can see on the right-hand side there, and they concluded from that similar spectrum that these animals were bioluminescent when they were alive. But to me, that's really poor science, because the controls should have been to look at other adjacent areas of cuticle that are not postulated to be bioluminescent to see if they have the same autofluorescence characteristics. They didn't do that. I think it's just that what the patterns that we're seeing on this diagram here are just common fluorescence patterns of all insect cuticles with individual variation. It doesn't prove bioluminescence by any means. And the sort of another take-home lesson out of this is the way that this misleadingly written paper was then picked up by the the science press, and the story was sent around the world. And if you keep it in the back of the mind that they're probably not even bioluminescent at all, these articles look ridiculous. And there's one actually that is just crazy, because it says the spots on the dark brown area of the carapace are pits inhabited by microbes that glow under fluorescent light. Nobody ever mentioned microbes. And if they glow under fluorescent light, they're not bioluminescent, they're fluorescent. So, you know, some really poor science, poorly communicated, and then it gets just disseminated out in the literature. So it teaches you to keep your eyes open and always doubt what you read. Okay, let's look at what insects use bioluminescence for. I've already mentioned that adult fireflies use bioluminescence to find mates. But the immature stages of many fireflies also produce light, but they rarely flash. They usually produce it in long periods. And it's believed to be aposomatic, associated with distaste, because the experiments were done on toads that were fed these animals, and they'd learnt to avoid the bioluminescent animals because of the distaste associated with them. And I've also mentioned that in the phengodids, the adult females are often larvae form, that is, they resemble larvae more than other adult beetles. And that's also common in the Lampyridae, the fireflies, that the adult females are often grub-like. And actually, the word glowworm probably originally derived from these grub-like females that flashed in response to the males. The interesting thing, when you're looking at the physiology of light production, where did it come from? What tissues did it evolve in? Is that the larval and adult light organs appear to be unrelated, that at metamorphosis, the larval light organs break down, and a different structure within the pupa to adult produces light, becomes the light organ. And among species, there's quite a bit of diversity in light organ structure. The light organ lies directly underneath the cuticle that's shown dark brown here on this slide. So let's have a look at the structures that produce light in fireflies. It's believed that the structures producing the light, the structures sitting underneath the light organ, that where the cells that bioluminesce, that they're derived from fat body because they show some morphological similarities. But then they're highly modified because they show a very structured, discrete structure within the light organ, shown in this diagram. The cells themselves are called photocytes. They're large cells, and they're full of small granular structures called peroxisomes. And it's believed that it's the peroxisomes that contain the chemicals, the luciferin and luciferase, that actually produce the light. Now, light requires, it's been known from experimental approaches that they need oxygen and they need ATP. So if the animal is placed in a vacuum, the air is sucked out of the container that a beetle is kept in, it will stop flashing. So it requires oxygen. And it's also noted that the light organs have a strong tracheal supply, many trachea, and that sort of is circumstantial evidence, I guess, for the fact that that oxygen is required for light production. And this diagram shows the neural innervation of the light organs as well. You can see on the left hand side the trachea, small t. They come up against a tracheal end cell, TEC, and there is a nerve ending sitting within that tracheal end cell. And those nerve endings have shown to be to contain clusters of biogenic amines believed to be octopamine. And there's the large tracheal supply provides a lot of air to the organs, and also the trachea form a mass that makes, because the trachea are reflective, they make a large reflector that sort of dissipates and reflects the light once it's produced in the cells containing the peroxisomes, the photocytes. So How is it controlled? It's still not absolutely clear, but it's known that the nervous system is required, that octopamine is required as the neurotransmitter, and it's more recently been shown that nitric oxide synthase is present in these cells as well from antibody staining. The cells are full of trachea, they're full of peroxisomes, and the chemicals that produce the light are luciferin, which is a substrate, and luciferase, which is an enzyme. So in the presence of oxygen and ATP, luciferase acts on luciferin to produce light. And there's a couple of different theories about how the oxygen supply and the neural innervation can regulate this flashing, because the flashing is very tightly regulated because it's species specific and it's used in mating, so it's not surprising that it has to be a specific signal of flashes at the right rate, the right frequency, and the gaps between flashes need to be consistent for signaling between male and female. The theory shown in this slide is that oxygen from the trachea is normally, when the animal is not flashing, it's being consumed by respiration in the mitochondria. And that when an animal is flashing, that it's a response to octopamine being released at the nerve ending, which then acts on nitric oxide synthase to make nitric oxide, which inhibits the mitochondria. And that inhibition of oxygen use by the mitochondria then allows oxygen to get access to the peroxisomes and produces a light flash. So that's one of the basic theories as to how light is regulated, because the components such as nitric oxide and octopamine and the requirement for oxygen and ATP are all known from other experimental approaches. An alternative is that it could be that the fluid inside the trachea is regulated, because it's known that some very fine trachea can be filled with fluid, and it's believed that that amount of fluid can be regulated through by absorption of liquid through osmotic pressure changes within the cells around the trachea. And so it's believed an alternative method to allow oxygen to the peroxisomes is to rapidly remove liquid from within the trachea, and that then allows oxygen to flow to the peroxisomes and produce light. So I guess you could say that the jury is out. It's not known which is the most accurate model at this point. Other insects use light to attract prey, and that brings us to the Diptera. They don't use it for mating, they use it to attract prey, as I said. Arachnocampa in Australia and New Zealand, and Orphelia in North America. And it's the larvae that bioluminesce to attract prey. Some species, the adults, will have some degree of light production, but it might not be functional. Some people say it's used in mating, but it hasn't been proven by any means. Okay, so let's look at Orphelia in North America. This is the larva. It lives on a web horizontally on the ground, on lichens. The head is on the left-hand side. You can see those white spindle-like structures there, the gluey mucus that lies in the web. And these animals produce light from those very large black cells that you can see just behind the head and also right at the tail. This photograph shows some blue bioluminescence followed by some natural light to show the location of bioluminescence. So it's believed those large black cells produce bioluminescence, but only when they ooze it out into the hemolymph. So it's not produced in discrete cells, such as in the photocytes we were looking at before. But these cells are photocytes, but they don't glow brightly themselves. They ooze some bioluminescent fluid into the hemolymph. I did a little bit of work on those when I was on study leave in the United States, and I've got some imaging to show that it is those cells that are producing light as well as oozing it into the hemolymph. And on the right hand side here is the green stippled line is actually a muscle, and the large red blobs are the nuclei of the photocytes that are producing the light. So the photocytes sit on a long strand of muscle within the body, And it might just be that flexing, releasing, relaxing the muscle might be what allows the animal to regulate the amount of light it produces, but it's totally unknown. The other organism that I've done a lot of research on is Arachnocampa, the Australian and New Zealand glowworms. The adults, top left, are quite short-lived. They only live a week or so. The larvae live months. And the pupa is shown on the top right there. They hang themselves from this mucus substrate. They lie in on a mucus runway, and they hang that from the substrate with silk lines. They hang down this web with mucus dots on it. They produce light from a completely different organ to Orphelia that we just looked at. In Arachnocampa, it's the tips of the Malpighian tubules that produce light, which is a very unusual function for Malpighian tubules. They're almost always involved in excretion, but in some cases they may be glandular, if you remember from some of your earlier lectures. The cells, the Malpighian tubules, separate from the gut at around the mid-gut-hindgut junction. But in some animals, they wrap up against the gut again towards the rectum. That's called a cryptonephridial system. It's in most animals, it seems to be designed to extract water from the feces before they're released. But in these animals, that cryptonephridial system seems to have been secondarily modified yet again to produce the light-producing cells. There's some very large cells associated with the terminal part of the light organ. That very dark structure in the box on the bottom right hand side is a massive trachea that looked black under this microscope slide, but they're actually very silvery and reflective. As you'll see here, the massive trachea is white, so the cells would be just sitting against those reflectors, and if this animal was bioluminescent, that area would be bright blue. So the bioluminescence in glowworms is blue-green. It peaks at 485 nanometers. It's ATP dependent, just like firefly bioluminescence, and it has an enzyme substrate reaction, which is generically called a luciferin-luciferase reaction, but they're not the same chemicals because they don't cross-react with each other. And glowworms glow persistently through the night. They don't flash like fireflies. They're not using this signaling for for mates or anything like that, because they're the immature stage. So they glow to attract insects. They glow brightest in the early evening in forest glowworms, and they brighten up when they're stimulated by vibrations in the vicinity, because that indicates that there's prey around. And they also have aggressive interactions with each other when they brighten up. A student had a look at the innervation of the light organ, the nerve supply, and using some fluorescent antibodies to look at the nerve supply, and found that there is innervation of the light organ from the thoracic abdominal ganglion, shown on the top right up there. The student, Lisa Rigby, also looked at the effect of anesthetics and found that anesthesia causes them to release a lot of light. So this reinforced some earlier work that indicated that glowworms, when they're not glowing, are actively repressing the bioluminescence. But when they're knocked out, or the brain is removed so that there's no longer this neural inhibition, they release their light. And also, if you remember, there was work from other researchers to show that octopamine is involved in regulating bioluminescence. Lisa did some experiments where they ingested some octopamine, and that caused massive releases of light as well. So it seems that there are more similarities with the firefly system. They're not homologous because they're different organs producing the light, but it seems that they've settled on a somewhat similar innovation using these biogenic amines such as octopamine to regulate the light. The light organ can be actually removed from a larva and placed in a saline solution, and when you put octopamine in that solution, it causes those cells to produce a lot of light. So you don't even need the whole nervous system connected to the light organ for that to happen. When you just remove the light organ from a glowworm, it starts to produce light. That's because the neural inhibition has been removed. And that's shown in this graph here, where under control. And you can see at time one is when the light organ was removed from the larva. And it's producing light over a period of 5-7 minutes. And then that stops producing light after, say, 12 to 15 minutes. So there is a loss of neural control leading to a small amount of light emission. But if you add a biogenic amine such as octopamine to the bathing solution at time 7 minutes, you can see that there's a massive increase in the light output. But other biogenic amines such as serotonin, dopamine and tyramine don't produce that same effect. If we look over on the right hand side, you can see that the carbon dioxide bubbled into the water produces a high output as well. So it's acting directly on the light organ. And octopamine antagonists, those that antagonize the activity of octopamine, unusually they have different antagonists, have different functions. Two of them, phentolamine and epinastine, have no effect, but one of them, meanserin, causes a massive release of light. So the story is more complex. It's not quite as simple as we hoped we would see. I don't expect you to remember all the details of this, but I'm showing you because it illustrates the way the effects of these biogenic amines can be experimentally shown to influence behaviours such as bioluminescence. But people can inject these amines into animals like bees and monitor the changes in their behaviour. Okay, so just a little bit more about luciferin and luciferase and the more general applications. It's a multi-step chemical reaction, and as I've already mentioned, that the Diptera versus the Coleoptera, they both utilize a similar reaction, a enzyme acting on a substrate, but the chemicals aren't homologous, so they're independent evolutions of the same solution to producing light. And very interestingly, there's been quite extensive use of the beetle bioluminescence system. It was patented maybe in the 60s or 70s, and it's been used a lot in a lot of different circumstances. It's used scientifically to make transgenic animals to track gene expression, where the luciferase gene is under the control of a promoter. Commercially, it's used to measure ATP levels, because if you remember that the luciferase and luciferin only produce light when ATP is present, so it's used as a good indicator of the presence of ATP in a piece of machinery called a luminometer to measure those low levels of biological light. And in cancer research, it's used to image and track cells. Tumor cells can be tagged with the reporter gene that makes the beetle luciferase, and if you inject the mice that have this tumors with the substrate luciferin, then the tumor cells actually produce light, and they can be placed in a very, very dark chamber with a very sensitive light sensitive camera, and the tumor can be imaged where there are concentrations of cells.